listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.
Today on our show, we're talking with David Wolf. He is a health, eco, nutrition, and natural beauty expert known as the rock star of superfoods and longevity. He's written numerous books, including Eating for Beauty, The Sun Diet Success System, Naked Chocolate, David Wolf on Raw Foods, Superfoods, Super Herbs, Amazing Grace, and more. David, thanks so much for being with us today.
Right on. Thanks for having me.
So to begin with, I want to ask you a number of questions. I was very influenced myself by the first book you wrote. I believe it was one of your first books, The Sun Food Diet Success System.
Yes, that was my first
book. It's a great book. I love that book, not just because of it being inspiring and launching my own experiments with raw food, but also your poetry in there I thought was a great contribution, and there was something very kind of loose and giving about that.
Right on, thank you.
So when did you first start eating raw?
Well, I think it started for me when I was 19, so that's back in 1989. That's a long time ago now. And it really was a result of, I think it was just a result of being on my own and buying my own food. And then I read a book called Fit for Life, and written by Harvey and Marilyn Diamond. And that really got me on the track of eating like a high percentage of raw food. There was actually the word raw foodist was in that book. It was the first time I ever saw that phrase, like, oh, a raw foodist, like a person who eats raw foods. And then about 4 or 5 years later, it was when I was 23, I really got into it in a much more depth, you know, like eating totally raw food diet. And so that's been about, I mean, we're getting close to 20 years. It's like 19 years.
And along the way, did you ever struggle at all? I mean, my personal story is I've gone on and off. I've been living in New York, I've heard some of your lectures, but I also was raw for 2 years when my son was born. It was great. When 9/11 hit, I went and I had a bagel and cream cheese, and maybe it was the emotional thing of it. But it was the emotional thing of it. I was in the city when that happened, and honestly, the first thing that came to mind was the comfort food I had when I was a kid, which was a bagel and cream cheese. You know, so and I'm back on it now. But do you find that happens? Have you had any struggles with people, with yourself going back and forth, or temptations?
It's been a long time. I mean, I've been into this a long time. I mean, I had struggles in the beginning. It really took me like 4 or 5 years to really transition to really becoming a raw foodist. And then over a period of time, I basically became really more of a superfoodist. You know, I do a lot of superfoods. You know, that's probably like right now, the bulk of my calories in my diet is right now blueberries. And then I'm just throwing stuff in there. You know, I'm like throwing my favorite olive oil in there with the blueberries. And it's just, you know, at this point, it's easy for me. So I don't really have to depend on like, any kind of real heavy foods at this point, and I can kind of skate on real light foods, and it feels really good and real, real easy. It's a step-by-step process is really what I'm driving at. It's not easy. You know, when you transform your diet, you're really transforming everything about your life. You are what you eat is very deep cosmic principle, actually. And, it's a step-by-step process. So it took me 4 or 5 years, and then I just stayed with it. And I got deeper into it. And when I was about 23, 24, that's when I went totally raw foods.
Huh. And can you tell me just what you ate yesterday, starting with after you woke up, what your routine is and what you eat throughout the day, if that was, I mean, whether it was a typical day or not?
Well, it's always atypical. People ask me that question all the time. It's such a hard question to answer. I mean, basically yesterday consisted of a salad. Well, let me just start from the beginning of the day. A lot of water in the morning and then a salad. No, I didn't have a salad till later. I had a blueberry thing. So I basically, I'm up here at my place in Ontario, Canada, and we have wild blueberries. So that's basically the fundamental meal up here at this time of the year. So it was a big
bowl. Which means what? So you wake up, you have a few glasses of water, and then you're eating just raw blueberries, or you're having a smoothie in a bullet, or what is it that you're actually making with those blueberries?
Okay, so what I actually did is I took a big massive amount of blueberries, like a big bowl, like a cereal bowl, and filled it up with blueberries and then poured olive oil onto it. And also, I have also some wild berries in my yard, like raspberries, and I have wild Saskatoon berries, and I have elderberries. That's just stuff that's just in season right now. So I just threw that all in there. Then I put olive oil on it because I have this most amazing olive oil by my friend Dr. Rallis, and he's a doctor who lives down the highway from me here, and his family's from Greece. So any chance I get up to for good olive oil, I will consume it. And so I put on the blueberries, and I put honey in there, and I'll take some powders like marine phytoplankton, like superfood powders, blue-green algae, shaga, medicinal mushroom powder, and I'll just mash that all up in like a big mashup. It's like a breakfast cereal kind of a thing, and except there's no liquid in it except olive oil, and that's a meal. That was my breakfast and lunch yesterday. Then later in the afternoon, we made a huge vegetable juice. I had a bunch of vegetables that were accumulating. I had a bunch of beets, and so we juiced the beetroots, we juiced all the vegetables, we juiced the cucumbers, and made an awesome juice. And then for dinner, we had a salad, and that was about it. Then I had a little bit of these raw chocolate treats that some friends had made for me. It was like, two or three of those in the evening. And that was my day.
And so there's obviously no tea in there or caffeine of any kind.
But I will do green tea sometimes, and sometimes I'll do matcha, which is a powdered green tea, but not really this time of the year. That's something that I do like in the middle of the winter. So I do make tea here, but it's only on my wood-burning stove, and that's what heats my house. So basically, we have a tea running whenever that wood-burning stove's on, which is generally right through the cold months here.
Well, that sounds wonderful. I didn't know you were based in Canada now. You moved there from California, is that correct?
That's right. And
And
I've been here 7 years.
why is that? You're an expatriate. Is that true?
Basically, I mean, yeah, it's family stuff. I've got family up here, and it's friends, and it's the environment. And I'm originally from New York, New Jersey. So, I grew up in like New York City. I grew up in New on the Jersey Shore, exactly where the Jersey Shore TV show was filmed, by the way. I'm from Seaside Heights. That's where I was born. And
Wow.
that's kind of a trip. And then we moved to Southern California when I was 10 years old, and I always longed for those forests of upstate New York because, California is not as forested. And then as an adult traveling around the world, I moved back to New York and then, started coming up to Toronto to do events and inevitably came back up here, which is basically like New York, upstate New York, but it has the different geology, which I really love. I love the Canadian Shield.
I would think California, though. I mean, to me, I've never lived in California, but just the warmth of it and the amount of fruit trees and everything else would be much more ideal environment for a raw foodist.
From a certain perspective, yes, but not for me. I mean, I really, really love the deciduous forest of Appalachia and the extensions of Appalachia, which is what you see in upstate New York and what you see all the way into Quebec and Ontario, Canada. It's a much more complex ecosystem. It's much more interesting to me. I love trees. In the property that I'm on right now, there's 150 different types of major trees here. I mean, in California, there might be three. It's like it's such a difference.
Wow, that sounds beautiful.
It's beautiful.
Let me ask you, are there people who can't eat raw? I mean, diabetics or other people, are there some people who specifically should not attempt a raw diet, or is it possible for everyone to do this?
Well, raw food is for everybody, almost everybody, in my opinion. Eating totally raw is a different story. There's a lot of factors, right? It's very difficult to actually eat totally raw in the world that we're in right now. You really have to be dedicated to it. You have to have the right type of, fire inside you. You also have to really have good digestion. So if people have really, really bad digestion, have a long history of digestive disorders, they should eat some raw food. I mean, everybody should. It's just like, lifting weights with your digestive tract. You have to have some real, like, natural food the way nature presents it. But to do that entirely and totally for the long haul is not possible for everybody. I like juices for everybody. I think that's a great way to get raw food in your body. I think that diabetics, you mentioned diabetes, Diabetics would do really well with raw foods. I mean, raw foods is very anti-diabetic. We found that out 13 years of research at the Tree of Life Institute down there in Patagonia, Arizona, with Dr. Gabriel Cousins. I saw people turning around their diabetes type 2, in 2 weeks. I mean, coming completely off of insulin. Adult onset diabetes is basically not a disease. It's a mineral deficiency and nutrient deficiency and toxicity syndrome. And once you turn that syndrome off, you get the omega-3 fatty acids in, you get the raw oils in, you get the junk oils out of your diet, you get the raw foods in, you get the fresh juices in, you bring in the supplements like enzymes, boom, all the symptoms just go away. And again, 2 weeks we saw people coming off insulin. Everybody, I mean, it was like that program is so good. It just everybody just comes off of it. And Gabriel Cousins actually wrote a great book on the subject called "There Is a Cure for Diabetes," that you should read if you're a diabetic and you're listening right now.
Wow, thanks for saying that to the people who are, and I'll also put a link to that book in here for those who are accessing this on the web. It's very interesting. You spoke a little bit about having a fire inside, and I'm not sure if that relates to the fact that a friend of mine who was a vegetarian for 30 years and then stopped being a vegetarian because he said his Chinese herbalist said he didn't have enough yang energy. He said, "I wasn't strong enough." And he has a farm upstate in New York, and he said, "You know, I have animals, and now we eat meat, and I pray to them before, you know, they're slaughtered or whatever." But he said, "You know, having meat now," he said, "I have a tremendous amount of energy, of yang energy, of fire that I never had before, and that most of my vegetarian friends don't have." These are not all raw foodist people, but is that a little bit what you mean by fire? And is that an issue, this kind of, if that makes sense to you, this kind of yang energy that gives people sort of strength and vitality and muscle?
Yeah, there's a great term. It's a great concept that comes out of Taoist tonic herbalism. It comes out of Taoism, you know, Shaolin monk stuff. And it actually precedes Chinese medicine. It's a tremendous teaching. And it's about this idea of primordial life force energy, which is called Jing. And we've heard about Qi. You know, the West, we hear about Qi, which is it's a treasure, you know, that you build up through your lifestyle. That's the energy you have day to day. It's the way you move energy. But there's a more primordial energy in Chinese medicine and Taoism called Jing. And there's one more thing I want to say about that. There's really three energies at work. One of them is Qi, the way you move energy day to day. Then there's that primordial life force essence, which is Jing. And then there's Shen, which is your heart energy and your aura. And those are things you can build up through your lifestyle, through your thoughts, through the way you're emotionally engaging with people, through your food and diet. And the issue here is Jing. So if you're a vegetarian, you have to be careful not to lose Jing. And I'm a vegetarian, so I've had to really work around this concept and figure out, okay, because I've been a vegetarian a long time. I've been a vegetarian over 20-something years. I mean, it's 23 years. So it's a long time at this point. So I now have to be aware of, okay, I got to make sure I don't lose Jing. If you eat a little bit of animal food, like a little bit of fish, you know, not stuff that's like coming out of factory farms, but stuff, you know, you grow on your farm, like chickens you have on your farm, or you have a little bit of wild fish, then that will increase Jing. If you have too much animal food, it will decrease Jing. So there's a right amount for every person that their body and metabolism can handle that will actually give them depth of strength and depth of energy, you know, primordial energy, not just chi, not just day-to-day stuff, but where you feel like a depth that's been added in. But because I'm committed to vegetarianism, I'm going about that in a different way. So what I've done is I've figured out ways of getting Jing and even things out of the animal kingdom that don't require killing. Because I'm not into killing. I don't want to have that on my shoulders. So for example, the most powerful Jing substance is deer antler, which you can procure without killing the animal. I mean, the animal goes back into nature, they regrow their antlers every year. So it doesn't really affect them to the point where they can't survive in nature, and it doesn't affect them to the point where they can't make it, you know, back in with their tribe. So that's an interesting angle. I do that occasionally. That I really don't do it that much. I'm very deeply into the Taoist tonic herbal approach of eating black foods, black foods are very good for jing. So, for example, black sesame seed, black tahini, black chia seed,
flaxseed. Dark brown.
Well, they're usually brown, but black mushrooms, like chaga mushrooms, a black mushroom. So it, really anything that nature presents to us that's black, of the black olive and olive oil made from that kind of olive, is that's very powerful jing. It has primordial life force energy, which feeds into your longevity. That kind of stuff, yeah, I'm all about it for sure. And it's accurate. I think that teaching, the jing teaching of Chinese medicine and Taoist tonic herbalism, is accurate. So that's kind of what's going on with your friend. He had lost jing, being a vegetarian, and suddenly eats some animal food, boom, regains his jing. So he feels that. But then the other side of it is you have to be careful, because you're eating out suddenly at the top of the food chain. You expose yourself to a lot more. You expose yourself to a different type of karma. And also you got to be careful you don't start losing jing because you eat too much animal food.
Right. So the way you manage it is by eating, and I never heard of those mushrooms before. I know you mentioned that right at the beginning. Can you say a little bit more about what those mushrooms were? Because I don't think you were talking about that in the Sun Food Diet system or other things that I'd read.
It's in later editions of my Sun Food Diet, but you probably read an earlier edition before I was really aware of this whole concept. I had to put these concepts into the Sun Food Diet later. I've always rewritten all of my books, so they're up to date right to 2012. Every one of my books is up to date right to now. So that's I love that, you know, that I've just kept, you know, putting it out there like that. It's been a lot of work. A lot of people put out a book and then that's it. It stays out there. But I have always updated to add. And chaga mushroom is actually, because of living in the boreal forest up here in Ontario, I became aware of it. I just became aware of it up here. It's a long story how I got into it. But I started consuming it about 6 years ago right off the trees here. It's a tree mushroom. And it's considered in Siberian shamanism to be king of the mushrooms. I got so into this mushroom and I realized there's such a deficit of information about this mushroom. This is the king of mushrooms. The mushrooms are a huge class of living organisms on this earth. I mean, it's like plants, animals, mushrooms, bacteria, and then, you know, the extremophile organisms that live in the earth. Those are the five classes of things that live on this earth. So for something to be king of the mushrooms, it's got to be something. So I wrote a book on it, and it comes out on September 11th, actually. And it's very deep scientific treatise on what chaga mushroom is. It's also very fun to read. It's really came out to be an excellent book. I'm really happy about it. It's just off the wall. I didn't think I'd write a book about a medicinal mushroom ever, but that's just what happened. And I ended up writing this book. It's called Chaga, King of the Medicinal Mushrooms.
Wow. That sounds, so you eat that regularly as well. And that sounds like a powerful form of jing for you, or cause the rest is seeds. They don't sound quite as, pardon the term, but as meaty as a mushroom might be.
Right. Yeah. This mushroom is like, it's something else. It's cosmic. It is absolutely something special. That's why I ended up writing a book on it. I was forced into it. It wasn't like I wanted to write this book. It just like Mother Nature just said, you're writing this, and just pushed me into it. I think that happens to a lot of writers, is that they end up writing books, or that, you know, end up writing movies and stuff that they just felt like this needs to happen and just did it that way. And that's kind of how I feel about this book.
And how do people procure that particular mushroom? Is that something that you sell or they can buy normally? Because I've never seen that in stores, though I'm not looking for it, but I haven't seen that around very much.
Yeah, because of the surge, you know, I've been really putting the word out there about chaga for the last five or six years, and so many of my friends in the industry have. Now you're going to start seeing chaga products showing up in health food stores. If you look in kind of the supplement section, you'll see medicinal mushrooms as a section now, and you may see chaga in there. If you look at ones that have like 10 different medicinal mushrooms in it, if you look in the label, you go, oh, there's chaga right there, Inonotus obliquus. That's the Latin name, Inonotus obliquus. And then it's on the internet too. It's all over the internet now. And chaga, by the way, is spelled chaga. And then there's more products coming out all the time. I'm just involved in really developing all that stuff right now. Some great chaga products to put out there for folks that, you know, it's a needed medicine. It's a very, very powerful cancer fighting herb. It's the actually the most powerful cancer fighting herb in the world. It's the most incredible. It's quite a story, the shaga mushroom. But again, it's why do I take it? Because it's deep energy, jing energy. It's primordial earth force that just gives you the power.
And more so even than the black seeds that you're talking about or similar?
Yeah, shaga is superior because really it's food for your immune system. Medicinal mushrooms are food for your immune system. So when you eat celery, celery is great food for your digestive tract. It's great for your bones, but it's not really for your immune system. Same with lettuce. You know, lettuce is a great food for your lungs. It's great for your digestive tract. It's great fiber. It's great for your blood, but it's not food for your immune system. So when you start really breaking down, like what are we eating for our immune system? For the average person in our society, it's nothing. We never eat anything that feeds into our immune system, so we're susceptible. So people get coughs, colds, flus, fevers, all kinds of things all the time. And it's like, that's a bad situation. You never want to be sick ever. You know, you've got to be have an immunological armada that powers you against anything so you never get sick. And that means you have to eat for your immune system.
Right. I know that's a very interesting thing. I know that's recently I was talking to a woman who had been taking antibiotics for 10 years from when she was, I think, about 15 to 25, and it was for acne on her face. And, I mean, hard to believe that doctors would do that, but apparently they still do. And her immune system was completely shot, and she had tried a lot of things. She was spending almost $1,000 in probiotics and eventually did something called, I don't know if you know about this, but a fecal implant or something where they're actually putting fecal matter from a healthy person in her intestines to try to grow millions of healthy bacteria in there. Have you encountered situations like that too? And do you think her situation could have been remedied in a different way?
Well, I really recommend that people who are in that situation study Donna Gates' book, The Body Ecology Diet. That book is written for people who are in that situation, and it's a tremendous book, and it's compatible if you're interested in raw foods too. It's compatible with that, but you need to have that information that she presents so you have a complete picture of what you're dealing with. There's a number of factors. One is there's a probiotic factor. You need to get the healthy probiotic bacteria into your gut. She presents numerous strategies how to do that, very interesting strategies. Then you need to get actually re-nourished so that you rebuild yourself from the inside out so you actually get the proper minerals into your tissue. You actually get fortified with real nutrients. You know, and raw food helps with that so much, especially juices. And then you need to actually eat for your immune system, you know, which means that you've got to actually start to fortify your immune system with food. And that's where the herbalism comes in. So over the years of being a raw foodist, you know, you really get into herbalism because I'm really into plants and I'm really into herbal systems because that's what I study. You know, that's not, I mean, I've kind of mastered watermelons at this point. I've mastered cantaloupe at this point, but you know, I got to go to where the action is, like herbalism. And that's where you find out how to eat for your immunity. And that's where the medicinal mushrooms come in. And they're probably the easiest step in for most people. You can find them in encapsulated forms in health food stores. You can find them as powders on the internet. You can find tinctures in stores and on the internet. And you just start into it. And you start investigating it. You start using these things as a food class. Like to me, fruit and berries is a food category. You know, I just eat that all the time. I have those kind of foods in my diet all the time. But so are the herbs, you know, and when I say the herbs, I'm not talking about oregano and thyme and marjoram. Those are great things, but I'm talking about super herbs, things that are like food that you can really like eat daily that fortify your being. That would be things like astragalus. That would be things like nettle. That would be things like medicinal mushrooms like reishi and cordyceps and chaga. That depth, the real powerful super herbs, that's really what I'm onto.
And those super herbs, you're by eating those daily, those are fresh and wild crafted. Is that how those are eaten or in powders? How what's the best way to have those? Or how do you have
those? The best way is just whatever form you can access right now. I'm not going to say any form is better than the other. I mean, I deal with the wild material of reishi and chaga, and I just found the most gorgeous lion's mane mushroom in the forest the other day. So I will take those things and I will take them and make teas out of them. I will take them and put them into alcohol and make tinctures out of them. I'll do all kinds of interesting stuff with the wild material. But, you know, most folks are like, look, I live in New York City. What do? You get the powders, you get the tinctures, you get the capsules, whatever your lifestyle would require. So you'll actually do it. And then from there, you'll go deeper if you feel it, you know, and that's what happened to me. I started with the encapsulated material and became a wild reishi hunter and a wild chaga hunter and a wild maitake and wild shiitake and wild lion's mane hunter because I got started in you know, in a health food store. I was actually cornered in the health food store by a friend of mine, Truth Calkins, an herbalist from L.A., and he basically forced me into getting reishi mushrooms. So that's how I started, and the rest is history.
And you were using, by getting reishi mushrooms, you were using fresh mushrooms and, again, combining them with other things?
At my house, yeah. So I have fresh reishi mushrooms. I found one in the forest the other day, so I will make tea out of it. And then even when I'm done making tea out of it, I'll fish it out of the tea. And it makes an incredible tea. I'll fish it out of the tea. I'll dry it out again. And then I'll throw it in alcohol, like vodka, and just let it sit there. And then that will become the base of a tincture for later use. Because the alcohol-soluble fraction of these mushrooms is very, very antiviral and also very anti-tumor and has other unique properties that the water-soluble fraction of the mushroom doesn't have.
Huh. That's fascinating. I want to ask you a few more questions about raw food. There was one thing that was on my mind that struck me, and I don't know if you had heard this, but I had read the Steve Jobs biography recently. And from what I gathered reading that biography, it seemed that he was a raw foodist or something extremely close to it. And when I began searching on the internet a little bit, I noticed that book has been talked about as Steve Jobs' eating disorders. Have you heard anything about this?
Absolutely. I knew Steve Jobs personally. And, you know, he back in the early days, he used to contact us about raw foods. And he was into raw foods. He was basically into Arnold Arendt's mucusless diet healing system, which is a
right,
very
that's
famous.
What that's what's often referenced in there. Sorry to interrupt you, but that's often referenced in the biography. The biographer obviously thinks he's nuts. And as I'm reading it, I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, he's a raw foodist like so many people. But go on. So he was into Arnold Arendt. And
yeah, the mucusless diet healing system. And my take on Steve Jobs is he got pulled into the medical route, which, you know, if you get pulled into the medical route, you're done for. He should have gone to see Dr. Gonzalez in New York and gotten on the heavy, heavy supplement enzyme program for pancreatic cancer. Dr. Gonzalez and his teacher before him have the highest rate of survival of pancreatic cancer of any doctors in the world. And it's raw foods and pancreatic enzyme supplements and really high dosages of those supplements, like 100 a day, 200 a day, 300 a day. And again, they have the best survival rate with pancreatic cancer of anybody in the world. But Steve Jobs went another route. I wrote him letters. I did the best I could to help him. But he was really eating way, way too much fruit for somebody who has cancer. I mean, you don't eat fruit when you have cancer. The sugar feeds cancer. So he was eating way too much fruit, way too many smoothies, way too many starchy foods, because he wasn't actually eating totally raw food diet. He was eating a lot of starchy carbohydrates. And just not really eating healthfully, actually, because you really have to get into all the food groups really in depth, including the vegetables, the vegetable juices, and the non-sweet vegetables, like green leaf vegetable juice. You have to get into the seaweeds. You got to get into the sprouts. You got to get into the nuts and seeds and an appropriate dosage for yourself. You've got to look into, you know, what's going on with, say, you know, these wheatgrass healing cleansing systems. You really just have to have a more complete picture, and you've got to have the herbalism. You have to. And he didn't really have any of that stuff. He was just eating, you know, fruit and fruit smoothies, which is not good for cancer.
Right, right. Sugar feeds that, and I guess I think also it can be problematic just to have a very high fruit diet in general, which is it's still an enormous amount of sugar in your body. Is that correct?
That's right. Yeah, and high fruit diet. People tend to, sometimes they can be healthy for a while, but they tend towards neurological problems, either in the short or long term, because they're not getting enough fats and oils in their system. They're not eating a complete diet. They're not getting enough grounding minerals, so they're not grounded enough. And you see that, and then they become very tyrannical, and sometimes they can either become very timid, or they can have another personality distortion, which is they can become extremely radical and very tyrannical, almost like mean and mean-spirited. And that's kind of like alcoholism. Because, you know, it's so much sugar in the system.
Sure. Well, Steve Jobs was some of those things. I mean, you know, honestly, he was sort of a personal hero of mine, but it seems that from reading that book, he was some of those things. He had a very abrasive personality, as well as obviously a visionary and someone who did seem to be interested in fasting and other things. So perhaps those were all factors.
Yeah, right. It definitely was somewhat of a factor. He was a fruit eater, and fruit eaters can tend to be crazy. You know, he had definitely Steve Jobs' case, and I love Steve Jobs, and, you know, he was a huge inspiration. But at the same time, there's no denying he had narcissistic personality disorder. You know, he definitely had a personality disorder.
Right. And let's talk a little bit about fasting, hallucinations, visions. I've done a lot of fasting myself. I know other people who have. I know you have. And I remember being at one of your talks and you asking people in a previous maybe discussion or book for comments on what had happened when they fasted. And I believe this was it, if I'm remembering correctly, and that there was one person that responded that he had kind of had a vision. And this is very interesting to me because, and I'm wondering what your take on it is, because, well, we're talking about health for the body and feeling great and being excited. What also about having visions and hallucinations that are not drug induced, but are something more akin to what Gandhi might have been experiencing, or Jesus, or anybody else who historically has been fasting, including Arnold Arendt. Do you have stories like that? And do you think that is a part of this kind of health system?
Yeah, definitely. Fasting is very important. Once you actually start getting nourished for real, you know, a lot of us are coming off very toxic diets. We're very malnourished at the cellular level. We've taken in all kinds of really dangerous salts that are used as preservatives in food, you know, which isn't salt. You know, to me, salt is sea salt, which is living. This salt that's used as a preservative in all foods is some kind of a chemical experiment. Basically, they take natural sea salt, they boil off all the different minerals, the trace minerals in it, they sell those off to chemical companies. What's left is basically sodium chloride. They then iodize that, and then they sell that to big food manufacturers, and they use it as a preservative in every food you've ever had. Anything you've ever eaten out of a box or a can has that salt in it. And that kind of salt, to me, causes hypertension. But that, you know, that is not salt. It's some weird whatever. I don't even know what that is. So we're coming off of all that weirdness, and eventually you come off of it. It's like coming off drugs, and then you start to actually like realize, okay, what is real nourishment? Then you become capable of fasting, and then once you start fasting, then you start realizing, whoa, we're eating too much food. You start getting into highs, like states of highs. That there's no wonder people are like doing drugs. It's because they don't realize that their natural state, which is getting your body clean and healthy and nourished, and then fasting brings you into states that are higher than any drug-induced high you've ever had. I mean, you walk around, you're in absolute bliss. You're like in another state. It's amazing. Once you start burning that glycogen off, once you get off of the blood sugar roller coaster that happens once you come off of food a couple days in, 3 days in, you come off of that, and then you start burning glycogen, all of a sudden you come into this like hum of the universe, and you're just in this amazing state. I got an amazing guy staying with me right now is a real incredible fasting teacher. And yeah, you can have all kinds of visions about your own healing, about what's going on with your life, about the universe, life, the universe, and everything. Everything. And I've had experiences like that, you know, lots of amazing experiences from fasting. It seems to be the answer to every solution. You know, you're confused, you're emotionally upset, you're disturbed, you're in a quandary about a problem, you have a health condition. Fast. You know, fast for a weekend and see what happens. Let yourself be sorted out.
Right. I also wanted to ask about that I know some people have asked for you know, in the United States more. There's medical marijuana now in Maine and California and many other places. But there are people who are taking it for medicinal reasons, whether it's glaucoma, nausea, other things that may also be raw foodists. Is there ways to have what they need from marijuana in a raw food combination, so that they can have what's needed without the harmful effects of smoking or heating it at all?
Yes, absolutely. And this is a myth that, you know, I've been trying to bust apart for years, and it's very important for medical marijuana cases. And there are a number of cases where medical marijuana is important. For example, you mentioned glaucoma, MS, multiple sclerosis, also very, very favorable for medical marijuana. There are other situations, for example, when somebody has pain from cancer, when somebody has extreme nausea and can't eat any food. Those are very good medical marijuana cases, and it definitely should be legal. It is legal in some states now, and it's really a good positive change because people need the medicine. But yeah, you can actually eat marijuana buds raw and get high from it, or get the effect, the medicinal effect from it. Now, if you're saturating your receptor sites by smoking it, you have to eat a lot of it. It's a different story. But once you kind of come off of basically when you smoke it, you're violating its kind of natural defense mechanism. The plant's natural defense mechanism is it has alkaloids in it that are like pepper. It's like cayenne pepper. So if you just chaw it, not chew it and not swallow it, but chaw it like you would chaw like tobacco in your between your cheek and gum, and you just kind of chew it and squeeze the juice and leave the juice in your mouth. And chew it and squeeze the juice and leave the juice in your mouth. Don't swallow it. Then what will happen in about 20 minutes is all of a sudden all the hot peppery alkaloids will come out of the material. And you'll be like, God, this is like cayenne pepper. Your mouth will be burning, but you have to hang in there. And then eventually you get through it. So you don't swallow your saliva. You keep that saliva in there and you just keep chawing through it. And eventually after about 30 minutes, it'll switch on. You will have absorbed the alkaloid. That's the best way to do it if you want to do it pure raw. You could blend it into a superfood smoothie. You could blend it into food. And if there's, as long as there's some fat there, it will activate it. But you might have to do more than like if you were smoking it, because again, when you're smoking it, you're igniting it, you're bypassing its natural defense mechanisms. And what I'm talking about is digesting it. There's also concentrates that are made in the medical marijuana community that are like just kind of raw THC capsules where it's just been kind of concentrated down with alcohol, and the alcohol has been evaporated off and it's been stabilized in glycerin. And those are good for people who really need not just, you know, to smoke it all day, but just one capsule or two capsules for an 8-hour period of time so they can overcome their nausea, for example, or get their eyesight back if they have glaucoma. So it's a longer lasting thing.
I see. So that's more time release. So it's because you're taking it in capsule form. Is that what's happening?
Well, it's just you're taking it through your digestive tract, so you're going to get a longer experience. It's more time release because you're digesting it rather than smoking it.
Huh. And when it's blended with smoothies, you're saying that's not quite as good as chawing, but there has to be some kind of fat in there. In other words,
To activate it. So when you digest the fat with the bud material, your body will activate it quicker.
So an example of that would be like juice, with olive oil, a banana, or an avocado mixed with the raw bud. Would that be an example of something like that?
Yeah, that's an example. Or you could use coconut oil, or you could use almond butter, you know, something that has a little bit thicker of a fat content in it.
Hmm. Okay, how much oil do you actually drink a day? Do you mind me asking? Because I'm so curious about that. I use oil, but it sounds like you're putting oil on quite a few things.
If I have good olive oil, I will eat a ton of olive oil a day. I mean, I'll do probably 125 milliliters or more in a day.
Which is how much is that?
I'm just thinking the bottle that I have is 375 milliliters, so I'll do a third of that bottle in a day easily. Sometimes I'll do half.
That's like a cup or two cups of olive oil.
Yeah, yep. Here's what the latest research on olive oil is. And again, it's all about the good stuff. I've got my Dr. Rallis olive oil. It's the good stuff. I know the family. I know exactly how it's made. It's ice jacketed. It's the rawest olive oil in the world. It's the bomb. I absolutely love Dr. Rallis's stuff. So when you have that, you can trust it, and then you can step into the research about what olive oil really is all about. Now, I mentioned that olives, because they turn black, are a Jing substance. There's no question now from the research, and this is the latest research coming out of Spain, it on thousands of people studied over, I think, 10 years or even might even be longer, 20 years. And it indicates that, one, the more olive oil you consume, the less likely you're to die of any cause, anything. And the factor is significant. It's like 38%. So that's very high. I mean, that's a statistical anomaly, actually. It's basically 4 out of 10 people will live significantly longer if they consume olive oil. If you consume a significant amount of olive oil, you also almost cut your risk of heart attack in half.
Wow, and that's probably they're not even talking about organic olive oil necessarily. That's olive oil that they're drinking in Spain and Italy. I mean, I buy organic olive oil, but it's not extraordinary olive oil.
Right,
it's good, but it's
definitely not the stuff that I have. I mean, I would never consume the amount of olive oil that I'm consuming right now if it's just like organic olive oil in a dark bottle that I got from a store. I really can't trust it in the same way. So my body isn't open to it in the same way. Now, here's another thing about olive oil, is that when you start looking at the major degenerative diseases like diabetes, like atherosclerosis of the, I'm sorry, arthritis, all those kinds of degenerative conditions, all of those also are affected by olive oil intake. They're all suppressed by olive oil intake. And it's just amazing. I mean, this whole thing about it is amazing, because even cancer, they found out that cancer was like 28% or 32% rate. It was complete, like that group, there was like 3 out of 10 that were completely free of cancer as compared to the control of people who weren't eating olive oil at all. And that's a significant amount. That's 30-something%. So when you start looking at nutrition, you're really playing a game of stacking the odds in your favor. And olive oil and strangely, chocolate are the two biggest things ever found that statistically stack the odds in your favor of living a long and healthy life.
So that's eating like raw cacao as well. We're talking about great olive oil and raw cacao.
Yeah, absolutely. Which has led me to a very bizarre combination, you know, when I'm at home, is the olive oil and cacao blended smoothie. You know, so I'll put those in the same drink, which, you know, doesn't necessarily sound appetizing, but it works and is definitely a longevity tonic, no question about it.
Wow. But in order to do that, you would not use traditional organic olive oil. You wouldn't suggest that. People really should be getting a much higher grade to do something like that?
It depends. You've really got to, this is my feeling, you've got to research the olive oil that you like. You got to find out exactly what's really going on at the farm. There's all kinds of weird stuff going on with olive oil. They're cutting it with cottonseed oil, rapeseed oil. They're cutting it with soybean oil. It's just like any kind of commercial non-organic olive oil, I won't even touch. No way. I don't want anything to do with it.
Right. But if it's organic, I guess that's more towards what could be good, but still an organic bottle off the shelf, you're saying still may not.
Check up on it. Check up on it. Yeah. Contact the company. Find out what's really going on.
All right. The last thing I want to discuss with you is Codex Alimentarius. This is something that I think you're familiar with, aren't you? The notion of what's happening with that World Food Organization?
Yes, it's basically legislation that's in motion in the United States. It's also in Canada. It's also in Europe to basically take away our food and supplement and health freedoms. And essentially, this is what we get for the types of governments that we've installed into power, which, you know, basically beings that are totally unconscious, they're totally disconnected from natural health, they're totally in the system, and people who are conscious in that government world are being bullied around by big interests, like banking interests and corporate lobbyists at the pharmaceutical level and that kind of thing. So that's where the stuff comes from, and we just see it over and over again. Everything that we're for, they're against. Everything we're against, they're for. It's just this crazy, weird duality that we have in our world.
And is there do you think there is a kind of conspiracy in that sense, or is this kind of straight political situation as you're articulating it? I mean, you know, I know the reading that I've done on Codex Alimentarius that someone recently just turned me on to by a friend who's from Europe in Amsterdam was saying, you know, there's all kinds of terrible things happening. And it was alarming. Governments talking about a new world order. What is the place of food in all of this? And is it a priority, or is it something that they don't even realize? Because as you're saying, they're being bullied by pharmaceutical companies and other special interests.
Now, I guess we got to start with the background on this, because, you know, as soon as you start saying conspiracy theory, you know, you're going to lose people because it's just too much to take on.
Right.
It's basically they're going for a monopoly. I mean, it's just like what any business would do. If you become big enough and powerful enough, you're going to go for a monopoly, right? So the pharmaceutical interest, they're going for a monopoly. You know, that's what's going on. So it's not anything weird. It's not conspiracy. It's just like, look, these people want a monopoly. They don't want any competition at all. And natural foods and supplements are a danger to them because it can put them out of business, right? So if you're in that power position where you're making billions, trillions of dollars, you're going to want to put anybody out of business who could put you out of business. And chiropractors and homeopaths and naturopaths and Chinese medical doctors and Chinese herbs and raw foods and natural supplements and all this stuff is a major danger to the power structure. And so they're now going, we want Codex. We want to make it impossible for people to get the stuff. We want to make it illegal so you can't even get any of it. We want to put every natural foods company out of business. And that's what we're up against here. And you got to be careful who you're voting into power, because you got to know that these people want to get rid of your freedom. That's really what it's about. You know, when you're dealing with Obama, he wants to get rid of health freedom. Absolutely. That's what this whole health care thing is about. Mitt Romney, my God, it's probably going to be worse. It'll probably even be more dangerous. I mean, this is total insanity. And this is why the only candidate we've ever seen in America who has any sanity whatsoever since JFK, who wasn't a puppet of the major corporate interest, is actually Ron Paul. I'm not a big, you know, fan of Republican or Democrat or any of this stuff. I mean, that's just all a scam. But it's like when Ron Paul says, like, look, we're going to abolish and get rid of the income tax. We're going to abolish and get rid of people who are being thrown in jail, you know, for petty crimes, for, you know, distributing marijuana. We're just legalize it and tax it like everything else. You know, he's actually talking about real change. Obama, there's no real change. Mitt Romney, there's no real change. None of these guys, there's no real change. They're puppets. They're put in there by the power establishment to push forward that power establishment's agenda.
Well, and it's not even really on the agenda. I mean, it'd be nice to, I mean, like you're saying, Ron Paul, he may be talking about that, but most politicians, we don't even hear that. That's not even a part of their platform, that food and health is an issue. I mean, we talk about health insurance and health care, but we don't talk about foods or a little bit about what I think Codex Alimentarius is about, the preservation of our ability to secure natural foods and supplements if needed.
Right. Yeah. They are going after it. Don't be fooled. Anybody listening should not be fooled. They do not want you to have access to supplements and health food stores. They want to make everything really weak. For example, colloidal silver. You know, colloidal silver, I think in America it's allowed at 20 parts per million. In Canada it's 10 parts per million. This is completely hokey. They've passed laws now so you can't be a colloidal silver supplement company and actually have anything that's efficacious, because the 10 parts per million is not strong enough. 350 parts per million, that's strong enough. And that's what you could make at home with a little colloidal silver, you know, maker. So they've already been doing it. They've already impinged in your freedom, but we don't even know. We don't even know what we've lost. We don't even know. We're not aware of what's going on. Like 350 parts per million, you have an infection in your mouth. You start gargling with colloidal silver. You start putting it around the infected tooth. That whole thing is taken care of in a few days. But at 10 parts per million, no, it's not going to work. So the next thing you know, you're in with a doctor or a dentist on antibiotics. So you're basically on pharmaceutical money. You're paying the pharmaceuticals instead of using colloidal silver. That's how I'm just making that real for us. So we see how the money, instead of going towards natural stuff, goes towards pharmaceutical stuff.
Sure. Is there anything that people can do who will be listening to help that cause, to battle it? Is it education, or is there any other place they can place their support for that?
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of groups on the internet that are lobbying to get rid of Codex in America, and they've got a lot of power. So I it's a woman. She's a great person. She's just running around all over the world. Her husband actually is a retired U.S. general.
And what's her name? I've
got to think of her name. You could find her through Dr. Gabriel Cousins. Does a lot of work with her. I'd have to really look into it. It's been a while since I pulled up her website. But anyway, I found out about her through Dr. Gabriel Cousins, and Gabriel Cousins would be a good resource there to find out. I'm just blanking on her name right now. I just want to mention, like, her husband is a retired U.S. general, and he's sick of it. He's just so – I mean, there's a lot of people in the establishment that are sick of this corporate, like, takeover of our whole freedom. And we don't even know, because what they do is it's a stepping stones approach. So they push legislation through, and then they kind of back off. Then they gradually bring enforcement on that legislation into place. 10 years later, they then take another step very slowly. So they're just step by step by step, they take your freedom away. It's called a stepping stones approach. And then they create a problem, manufacture a reaction, and then present their own solution to the problem. You know, it's kind of like how, you know, what happened with 9/11. You know, there's a lot of weird stuff that went on with 9/11 that's never been answered, but it's just, you know, they ignore it, don't want to talk about it. You know, let's not even talk about it. A lot of weird stuff like that going on in natural foods too, and you got to be aware of it.
And so other resources to tap into that world and learn more about that is your books. You're talking about that a little bit, but is there any other website that people should go to educate themselves more on that? Because that's a whole, it sounds like a rabbit hole of information, and I'd love to be able to guide people to particular resources.
Okay, well, I mean, we have an enormous resource library that's part of my online magazine called thebestdayever.com.
Okay.
So it's four words, thebestdayever.com. It's been going for 10 years. I have personally, at this point, I must have a couple hundred gigabytes of just my material on that site.
Fantastic.
Let alone other stuff.
We'll send people there. And in conclusion, many people listening to this may be raw foodists, but most likely most aren't. And how would they start a raw food diet tomorrow, or what would be the first thing that they should do to embark on that journey?
One thing is first of all, you got to go organic. Conventional food is an absolute, it's like a crapshoot. You don't know what you're getting. You don't know how many chemicals they're using. I've pulled up the FDA data on how much chemicals are in conventional food. It's over the pale. It's beyond comprehension. It's beyond comprehension. It's like 20 different chemical residues in a cucumber, like that crazy, let alone, you know, when you get into like concentrated like pizzas and stuff like that. There's data like that that I pulled off the internet that I've downloaded that's like all their own studies on how much chemicals are there. So you got to go organic. You need to go and you need to really look into, as best you can, just going berserk on raw foods, you know, go into the produce section and just getting vegetables and getting fruits and getting nuts and seeds and seaweeds and sprouts and wheatgrass and just get into it, because it's very hard for them, by the way, to take that away from you. I mean, they're trying everything they can do, but it's very hard to take away raw foods away from you. So that's good. You know, that's a great, and that's why raw food is such a great place to start, because they can't ban it, even though they're trying. And then the next step is juices. Get into fresh juices, fresh celery, cucumber, apple juice, fresh celery, cucumber, kale, fresh celery, cucumber, beet juice. That kind of stuff. Just really start getting into fresh juices and feel the life force energy come back in your body. Raw food is very good for chi, for opening up the energy and allowing the energy to move and mobilizing your energy and opening up the blockages and getting the weight off of you. And just, it's just amazing, especially if you fit it in with fitness. It's actually a miracle. And then you just go deeper, and that, yeah, as you develop your interest and your health changes, and you feel the differences, then you just go deeper, and you go, you know what, I need to get this cooked food out. I don't really, you know, why am I eating these chips? I don't need that. And you just push it back to maybe one cooked food a day with your dinner meal, which is, you know, would be a salad, and then, you know, whatever you're into. But I like sweet potato as a choice for people who are just really getting into this, because sweet potato cooked is, I think, a very good cooked food for folks. I think quinoa is also very good for people. And you just start thinning down what you're actually allowing into your holy temple. And then step by step, you might be pushed further and to go totally into raw foods, which, you know, I've been doing that for almost 20 years. And it's just magic. I love it so much.
David, thank you so much for spending time with us today and talking to us about raw food. I'm grateful that you were here on the show today.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it. And I'm glad we were able to get into some really fun stuff.
You're listening to Yale Radio WIBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the Art World Demystified.